You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Wes, he's a civil engineer, a lifelong Greenbelter. Jess is Greenbelt's head of festival operations, and they're going to help us think a bit today. And I think you're going to be doing some thinking as well about how we respond, what we can change, what we do. So I'm going to say no more than that and hand over to Wesley and Jess, and we'll look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. So thanks for joining us, and it's sunny, so we'll all be happy whatever happens in the next hour, isn't that right? How many of you have been along to one of the other sessions that we've run this weekend so far? Okay, that's nice. Some have, some haven't. That's fine. The purpose of today is to really think quite practically. So, headline figure, people's travelling to Greenbelt is the single biggest kind of carbon, aspect of the festival's carbon footprint. There's lots that the festival can do about lots of other things, which Jess will talk a bit about. But travel is an individual responsibility of all of us. So what we want to do here is really think about how people currently get to the festival, why that is, and what would need to happen for you to do something different. And are there things that the festival is in control of that they can do to help make that more possible? So we're going to talk a bit at the front here, mostly Jess talking a bit about how you actually put together a festival and how bloody difficult it is, and a bit about that. And then really going to open it up to the floor, hopefully get people to kind of break into little groups. We've got lots of post-it notes, have maybe 15 or 20 minutes just to sit around, have a chat, get some notes down, start to get the notes on the board about what things, could we do practically or impractically. You could be pretty wild. And then we'll have a bit of a get together and summarise it. And hopefully some of the things that are generated through the conversation are, things that Greenbelt can take forward and all of us can take forward for future years to come. So before getting into that, just do a quick show of hands. So who drove to the festival this year? No shame in it. Don't worry. Okay. Who took the train? Okay. So that's about maybe a third of the people in the tent there. Who cycled the whole way? Andy at the back there and his wife. We'll hear more from Andy in a moment. Who cycled some of the way? Okay, nice. That's a good full handful there. Anyone walk? No, bit of a stretch. That's fine. Who walked some of the way? I think we can all say we walked some of the way, surely. Yeah, okay, excellent. So, final round of little questions before we go on then. One of the things obviously we'll come to think about is how the festival practically does stuff, and practically basically means money, because everything costs money, particularly if you're looking to subsidize things. One of the revenue generators the festival has is the car park charge. I imagine there was many years, or there definitely was many years, where the festival didn't charge for parking. Do you know when the charge was brought in? It's been a few years, but at the moment, it stands at £20 for the weekend to park your car here. Quick exercise for the room. So first of all, for people that drove here, could you put your hands up again? So can you keep your hands up if you think £20 is a fair price to pay for parking for the weekend and reasonable? Okay, mostly people think it's fair and reasonable. Can you, if you think parking should be free and you shouldn't be charged, and again, no judgment here, just trying to get a feel, if you shouldn't be charged for parking, keep your hands in the air. Okay, so most drivers recognise that there is a reason to pay for it. Some, absolutely fair, think I've paid enough for my ticket, I shouldn't have to pay more for my parking. Who thinks that parking should be more expensive? So we're going to start at everyone back in the hands in the air. So £30, have we got £30 for the weekend? £30, okay, £40, anyone? £50 for the weekend? Okay, we got a handful of people. Well, you didn't drive, so you shouldn't be in this group. We're coming to you next, Jem. That doesn't count. No, that doesn't count. You get the next lot. So, any drivers think you should charge £50? Okay, we got a couple at the back. Okay, thank you. So, £20 or £30 on the driver front seems about what people think is fair. Let's get people who didn't drive now to put your hands in the air. And do we think, so £20 a weekend, do we think that's a fair price? Keep your hands in the air. Okay, people seem to think, okay, so people who didn't drive, do we think parking should be free? Okay, no one thinks parking, that's fine. So we go back to £20 again, everyone hands in the air if you didn't drive to the festival. So £30, have we got any 30s, any 40s? Okay, still a few 40s, any 50s? or a bit harsher if we didn't drive. Any 60s? No, Jem even doesn't go to 60. Oh, okay. Yeah, go on. Yeah. Okay, so you could have an optional extra. So if you were a driver, you could say, right, it's going to cost you 20, but here's a bucket. And if you think you'd like to cross-subsidise something else for someone else's travel, you could pay a bit extra. And that's a nice idea. And let's get that on the post-it notes later. Thank you. Okay, so that's good. That's helpful. Helpful, Jess?
Very.
Yeah. What we're going to do now is a couple of people's very short accounts of how people travel to the festival. We've got three or four. Just to get the ideas flowing, and then we'll talk to Jess, and then we'll break out into groups. So let's hear. Anna, do you want to quickly tell us how you got to site?
Hi, everybody. So this is my first Greenbelt Festival. My family lives without a car for environmental reasons in Cambridge. So actually, if you don't already own a car, it was cheaper for me to choose public transport than to hire a car, especially over a bank holiday weekend when it's going to sit in the car park for 4 days. So it cost us £180 on the train from Cambridge. The slightly annoying thing about it is that we had to go down into London and out again, when actually just along the A14 driving is much quicker. But the train was very smooth. When we got the train from London out to Kettering, we started to see festival people on the train wearing great outfits, and it started to feel like a bit of community. I think some of the people might also have been going to another festival, which we didn't realise until we got to Kettering. But that all went really smoothly. And we also, when we were planning for what to bring, we this was our first time camping with our three children, and we found a great trailer which we can attach to our bike and use at home, but also was very easy to push while walking. So we had about 20-25 minute walk from our house to the station, and then we obviously and just from King's Cross to St Pancras, and then into the festival. I brought three kids. They're actually 12, 10 and 8, which means they could carry some of their own luggage, but we have been traveling with them since they were babies on trains and things, so they're quite used to it. When we got to Kettering, the shuttle bus was amazing. The driver was amazing, really helpful with the luggage. Everybody we met in the queue for the shuttle bus was like so friendly. So that was like a real, real highlight. And then when we got into the festival, getting the Greener Belter wristbands was really nice with the vouchers. That just all felt really nice and welcoming as well. So that's all a big plus. Thank you. I would say, though, that obviously not everybody that's car-free is car-free through choice. So there are affordability reasons, and there are also disability reasons. And my family is experiencing that a little bit now, because last year my husband was suddenly told out of the blue that his eyes are degenerating, and he had to give up his license straight away. And that was quite a shock for us, but we don't even depend on a car very much. But that felt like quite a shock to our sort of freedom and independence. And I think that's a bit of a kind of a message of how a lot of our society is set up, that feels really hard. And obviously traveling by public transport is a bit harder to carry stuff. I've said, we had this great trailer, but we also have to travel light and choose very carefully what we brought with us. We also did manage to bring some of our food, but we are having to eat out a bit more, and that could be more of a challenge for people, for whom they're car-free through affordability reasons. I do have got somebody in the audience here who've told me that they've got loads of tips on food. So any of your tips welcome. But one thing that I haven't been clear at as our first time is, where are the best place to eat affordably, feed a family with something like dal, get their tummies full nutritiously and cheaply, and sort of just having a bit of a signpost to those places would be really good. And then another thing, I think, just to know more about who's coming from your area. So we ran into somebody from our church who said, if you've got anything heavy, we could carry it home for us, for you in the car or whatever. And actually knowing that up front, like who's coming from your area, maybe if you do need to bring something heavy, you could, have a bit of a car sharing or, different ways. Because another thing we've heard, that obviously we are young and fit and can push a trailer and carry things on the train, not everybody's in that position. My biggest thing would be really having a bit more of a sense of community and sharing and helping each other. I know, Wes, at one point you said, somebody from your church comes in a big minibus and brings a lot so that some other people might be able to travel by sustainable transport. And yeah, just building on that sharing and community that already exists here, I think would be a great thing.
All right. Thanks, Anna. Just to expand on your journey slightly, and I think doing it this way around hopefully just gives you a bit more, a few other pointers to talk about as well when we're talking. Jem, if you could come up here, and I'd like you to talk the journey from Kettering to Greenbelt, as opposed to the bit before that.
Including the stealth journey.
Including the stealth journey.
Okay, yeah. So for 20 years, been travelling to Greenbelt car-free. Normally trains, bikes on trains, not trains on bikes. That wouldn't work. So since come to Boughton, first year we came on the de-restricted roads with 2- and 4-year-old in a cycle trailer and all our luggage because we're already equipped. We're car free. That's the joy we find in living. That's how we make our lifestyle. We've researched how to carry everything, what kind of equipment we need. And we cycle camp, for instance, mainly in the Netherlands is easier, though we have done it in the Peak District, which is type 2 fun. Anyway, so back to this. After the first year of using the fast roads and even getting a puncture just before the festival, we found through using the Kettering City Council cycle mapping information and a night before at Wicksteed Park, which works for a young family and camping there, a traffic-free route all the way to the festival, entirely traffic-free from the train station to the village of Weekley and their church and cricket pitch, which you can kind of wiggle through by stealth if you've talked to the locals. You can then actually walk 400 metres down to the Star Pond, which is at the bottom of all the camping where the glamping is. We've had to carry it over a farm gate, all our gear, get it all off the bikes, lift it over. And I think sometimes we got injured, didn't we, Louise, doing that, or badly scraped. And sometimes it felt like a bridge too far. They've been renovating the Star Pond for the last couple of years, so we've had to return to the de-restricted roads. And we have been in good dialogue with the festival because we know it's about community sharing and ideas. We know that the license doesn't allow access via that way because of the settlement between Boughton and those villages. And we want to respect villages. But with the reopening of the Star Pond next year, maybe with a new sense of why transport infrastructure is so important, and that it is traffic-free in a completely straight line from the... Well, there's a little wiggle from the station, and then it's just straight. It's totally segregated all the way, except for a little bit where it's just people's houses, but the main road's separate. It's just like, let's see what we can do. But there is a lot of joy for us in being fulfilled and expressing our identity. But we know even, like, we only got the vouchers this morning because we're such outliers, and we recognise that, and we wouldn't be thinking that's going to work for lots of people. But modelling it can sometimes be an inspiration, and would like to see walkers using that route as well.
Thank you very much, and respect. We will come on to some of those practicalities in a minute. Jess has lots to say about that, I'm sure. Final little story then from Andy, who just popped up a few minutes ago, who's probably slightly insane, but I mean that in the kindest way. Who cycled all the way from Sheffield.
Yeah, not that insane. Well, yeah, I am insane. As a family, we heard last year one of the talks here about sustainability and travel, and travel being the biggest carbon footprint. And when we got back, we kind of agreed that we'd come this year, but that we wouldn't buy the car parking ticket. So right from kind of October, we knew that we were going to travel probably by bike. So we planned the route from Sheffield, looked at it, 106 miles, bit much in a day with a very heavy touring bike. So broke the journey with a travel lodge in Leicester for the first night. And then that gave us 36 miles on the Thursday morning. So we knew we'd get here before the campsite got really rammed. Our decision to come by bike affected my 17-year-old, because she normally would sit in the back of the car and just enjoy the free ride. So she rose to the challenge, and Thursday morning she got up at 6 o'clock. She was left the house at 7, and she beat us on site. So by the time we got here at 11:30, her tent was already pitched and she was enjoying life, and she told us how great the shuttle bus was and all those sorts of things. So yeah, it is possible if you are into active travel to kind of work it. We do quite a bit of touring with our bikes and camping along the way, so we've got all the right kit that we need, so it kind of works. But little things that help, obviously meal vouchers and things like that, really help with the cost. But yeah, other facilities, yeah, if there's more, it'd make it easier for more people.
Thank you very much, and massive respect for that journey, and hope to wear the holes you for your return journey. So we're going to have a chat with Jess now for a few minutes and hear a bit about, you know, the logistics of how that festival works, the decision making that has gone in the past in terms of people's journeys, and then that will set us up for our conversation going forward. So Jess, thank you very much. I'll hand over to you.
Hi. So my name is Jess. I'm head of ops for Greenbelt, and part of that role is that I'm the lead for sustainability of this festival. I'm an outdoorsy type, so I want to always maintain the spaces that I love, the canals, the mountains, the hills. So I'm a sustainability heart as well as an ops heart. So it's my job to work with Paul, the creative director, and Derek, the managing director. And quite often I sit in an uncomfortable spot in our meetings. And I'm glad that this year's festival is Dream On, because my comment is sometimes Dream On. And that's a hard seat to sit in, because in my nature, I am also creative. But in my job, think of me as the builder. I'm the guy who's going to tell you how long it's going to take, how much money it's going to take. And sometimes that kind of pulling it back down to reality. Hard seat to sit in when I'm also trying to be as creative as I can. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity from Wes. I really am. So that I can partner with you guys to dream on in more of a dream on, like less of a dream on kind of. I'm just saying the same thing here. So, yeah, each year we put a lot of thought into how we can make our space more sustainable. And I'm delighted to hear that there's impact, real impact of hearing our stories in this venue and how that kind of creates change going forward. It's why we do what we do. So, you know, obviously travel is the topic of conversation today. We are not unique in having this challenge. This is an industry-wide challenge for festivals. And if you look at other festivals who are serious about their sustainability aims, travel is where we find most of our challenge. That is not to demonize how you travel. I'm not here to tell you to do something differently. I come to this festival site by car because I usually have a boot full of signs that need to go up and all kinds of stuff. So I'm with you in terms of, you know, I'm not trying to be pious. But each year, thousands of us arrive in that way. And I guess my job when I build this thing is, okay, for those of us who can travel alternatively, how can I make that as easy and as smooth and as attractive for those who are maybe on the edge of thinking about it? Is it something like our Mia Vouchers initiative that's been launched this year? Is it communal kitchens so you don't have to bring everything, including the literal kitchen sink? You know, and so I can dream on from my office, but by engaging with you and hearing from you and partnering with you, I can make those budget builder decisions and put that effort and that budget in the spaces where it will actually have an impact, right? Because I've got a square with you. I haven't been to this festival in terms of being a member of the audience ever. Okay, so I've worked for this festival from the moment that I got here. I joined this organization as a career move. So I've not been a Greenbelter like you guys have been. So by even these few stories that I've heard today, I can get an insight into what you guys need and how I can put this effort into it. Yeah? So yeah, help me help you. Because obviously, I don't know if you know, but festivals are under real financial pressure at the moment. Since the pandemic, our costs have gone up by nearly 80%, 80%. And so trying to think carefully about the stewardship of where we spend that cash, I need to make sure that it's going into a space that's going to make meaningful difference for you, right? So yeah, I think that's my piece. I want to answer your questions and I want to partner with you, I think.
Thank you very much. And, you know, thank you for entering the lion's den, as it were. I'm sure you're not going to get any aggressive questions. there was a couple of things that I wanted to just get into before we go back to the floor. So one of which is the idea, so we talked about a few methods of transport. One thing we haven't really talked about is kind of arriving to site by bus or coach. Mm. And it's something that a few people in the past have raised, the idea, well, you know, if there was a coach put on from, you know, London or Cambridge or Northampton, that would be a much more convenient way of getting. Is that something that's been explored by the festival in the past? And actually, like, what would make that work? You know, what would, yeah, make it work for you?
Yeah, so about just pre-pandemic, so 5 years ago maybe now, we did a research project into whether people would want to put on coaches from major cities to get here. And at that time, there wasn't quite enough appetite when we put that into our post-festival survey to suggest that it would have been an effective, talking about this budget and where we put it, that it would have been an effective use of budget in order to kind of take away the CO2 that the coaches would put out, i.e. we wouldn't have the numbers. And I love what you're talking about, church communities and coaches. I think maybe that's a place where we can build some community perhaps. But we're also... later down the line, maybe we are at the point where we can revisit that kind of conversation.
Do you have any sense of, you know, what a typical ticket on a coach might cost someone if you were to be able to kind of, you know, if there was enough interest for a whole coachload of people to arrive from a city away?
Yeah, so I haven't got quotes for a while, but I know that we work quite closely with the Association of Independent Festivals. That means that we're plugged into a community of other independents like ourselves. Boomtown is a much bigger festival than us, but their tickets range from £60 to £140, depending on where you're travelling from in the country. So that's kind of the price range that you might be looking at for public transport from major cities directly to your festival. But that's not to say that we don't have to do it like that. There is another festival down the road. You might know Shambhala. It's not too far away. And there might be a reality in which we can pair with them to fill those seats. You know, a bit like if you've ever been on a holiday where you get a transfer bus at the end and it stops at multiple hotels along the way. August Bank Holiday weekend is a huge weekend. Anna was saying she was seeing other festival makers on her journey to another festival. Can we link in with organizations like the Association of Independent Festivals to kind of almost create a circuit? I you know, I don't have all the answers, but I've got lots of questions.
Okay, thank you. And then I just want to also touch on the Greenabelt wristband. And again, good to get people's thoughts in the audience on that. But from your perspective, where you stand, does it feel like it's been an effective campaign, you know, so far? Do you get the sense that it's been well received by members of the public, by ticket buyers, or is it hard to tell at this stage?
Well, this is the first year that we've launched it. And so obviously we'll get more feedback. I'm hoping to get some today, but also we'll get more feedback as time goes on. But I think that the priority in launching that was around... first of all, having the conversation. And so I did get some comments, maybe rightly so, about sustainable travel. I've come in an electric car and I've filled it full of people. Is that not sustainable travel? And so it's really opened the door to conversation, which I think is a not quantifiable success. But also, I'm so glad to highlight and be able to celebrate those that can and do travel by public transport. So yeah, maybe a little bit too early to tell in terms of numbers and how that's gone, but I'd be curious to hear from you guys, either who have or haven't received it, how you feel.
Out of interest, anyone in the audience, we do a show of hands again. Did the Greenabelt wristband, the idea of that change anyone's decision making in terms of travel choices beforehand?
What is it?
Oh, good question. What is it? Okay. So Jess?
So this year, for the first time, if you've travelled either on foot, by bike, or on one of our coaches, you'll be welcomed by one of our Greenbelt fairies, who look like these guys at the back, beautifully dressed, as fairies. You'll be given a Greenabelter wristband, which is an additional wristband, and some discount off a meal, your first meal when you arrive. There's also a drinks ticket on there as well, so you can get a cup of tea if you've arrived in the rain, which many of you did, and thank you. And yeah, and it's also a bit of a bragging right and a conversation starter in terms of wearing that wristband. Why are you wearing two wristbands? Well, actually, I traveled sustainably this time. So, yeah, that's why we've launched it. It's not perfect, and I'd love to include and celebrate more ways that people are making our festival more sustainable. But in its first year, we decided to keep it simple and go with that. So, yeah, I am looking to extend that program, but that's where it started.
Okay, so what we're going to try now, and this may not work at all, but please bear with us, is if people could kind of cluster in an organic a fashion as possible, we're going to pass around some post-it notes and just want to give, it might just be 10 minutes, we'll see, you know, how it goes. Have a bit of a conversation with the people around you. Think about the things that would make you feel empowered to make a different choice next time around. You know, what, and that could be to do with the means of getting to the festival. Do you need better incentives for you to get a train or cycle or whatever? Does it feel unsafe and you need to be safer? Does it need to be cheaper? Or it could be the stuff at the festival, and it could be to do with all the stuff you feel you need to bring with you, which means you need a car, and how much of that could be shared or could be provided in another way. And so it's those sorts of ideas we want to capture. Thinking about, I suppose, the carrot and the stick, you know, should we be providing more incentives to people to do things, or should we have a bigger stick to prevent people from driving? I drove, by the way. My name's Wesley. I'm a driver. And I had a toddler, and that felt like a good enough excuse for me. But then, you know, I met Jem. So, you know, that's what we do. There's a few of us that are going to kind of roam around to try and just help the conversation go. Jess will be available. So if you want to just come up and have a chat, but also sticking around afterwards, are you around? Yeah. So if you've just got questions for Jess, maybe we'll stick them to the end. But otherwise, we'll be roaming and just, you know, let's get ideas going onto post-it notes. We're going to stick them all on the board. Dave will be at the front helping to try and group similar ideas together. And then the last 5 or 10 minutes, we'll just do a bit of a summary about what the key themes that have come out. And Jess might have some thoughts about what feels realistic or not. Don't feel like your ideas have to be realistic. Write down whatever you think, whatever comes to mind, however, you know, wild and creative that might be. Great. So yeah, cluster around. Some of the fairies will come around and bring post-it notes. Have a chat, get some notes down. We don't have any pens. We have big fat markers. So if you don't have your own pen, grab a fat marker from the front. And yeah, we'll regroup in about 10 minutes or so. Okay, if I could ask everyone to return to their seats or swivel themselves back towards the front, we'll have a final little chat through some of the key things that have come up. And like I said before, Jess and myself will be around afterwards if there's any other questions that you're itching to get off your chest. And of course, you know, Greenbelt team are around all through the year if you want to email in ideas that come to you in the middle of the night. Please in do. The weeks to come. So thank you very, very much. I think we were both pretty taken aback by how quickly everyone dove into just getting into this and really genuinely having a go at working this through. So Dave is madly taking photos before the post-it notes blow away. So we can make some sort of record of this going forward. From the conversations that we've been having at the front as people have come up and put them down, there's a few kind of strong themes that have been emerging, you know, a few times, and as we go through them, I'm sure there'll be others. So we'll just talk through a couple of those now, and then, you know, we'll let you get on with your day. So, Jess, I wanted to come back to one point that Jem mentioned earlier. So the cycling to site, a few people have talked about the Kettering to the festival not being safe, not feeling comfortable cycling on the roads. What if anything can the festival do you think about opening up alternative access points to the site so that there are potentially these traffic free routes in the future?
Jem alluded to the fact that we have had struggles with the traffic-free route in, and that it's a sneaky route at the moment. It is one that we're aware of, and one that we're working with the village and the parish and the landowners here at Boughton to establish. Jem, you already kind of hinted around it, and I don't want to promise something that I can't keep, but 2025 is going to be a key year for that route because they are reopening what is the Star Pond, if you've walked down that way, and hoping to legitimize that route in 2025. Now, this is something that I'm sort of tentatively saying because I quite often have intention and then struggle for some reason, some sort of parish, or like you've said, this isn't actually an event contract, so it would mean a change to contract and stuff like that, but it is something that we are aware of, wanting to do, wanting to establish, so fingers crossed, wish me luck.
So if thank you very much for your hard work on that on behalf of everyone here and beyond, if we were to be able to open up a traffic-free route, let's just have a show of hands. Who would potentially be interested in cycling, you know, from Kettering to the festival if you could do it without conflicting with cars in the audience? Realistically. Okay.
Great.
That's a good number. One of the other thoughts that had come up is the idea of kind of arranging group cycles. So, you know, if we could do it in advance, actually, if you were to meet a group of, 20 other people at the station or 50 other people, for example, and you're all cycling together in a nice big hub, anyone else feel like that would make it more attractive and more safe and something you might do otherwise? Yeah, okay, a couple of people. Okay, so that's one of the things that was coming up. The idea of all the stuff we need to bring with us to camp and actually it being impractical by any other means than having a car. So lots of varying degrees of creativity in the suggestions that came forward, but a few things that came up a few times was the idea of communal kind of pre-pitch shelter tents in the campsite. So kind of big marquees that were already up there that you could pitch around, you know, potentially having access to, you know, if you had a green wristband or something like that. A segregated section of the campsite if you had a green wristband. It kind of playing on the theme of not needing to rush to site. So if it takes you a bit long to get here, you're not worrying about the fact you're going to be camped miles away. Or even being able to pre-book specific areas, you know, next to certain facilities. So, you have that certainty over where you're camping. Again, just, you know, practically, having that sort of, you know, either separate areas or some sort of pre-booking for people's own tents, is that something that, you know, could be looked into, or logistically could that work?
Yeah, I think almost anything can work logistically. It's kind of come back to that builder question of what it would take to get that off the ground. And I love it. I think it's a really attractive idea. And when I think about being an audience member at a festival, it's the tent, it's the walk from the car, it's the gazebo that we put up with our family to eat underneath, it's the cooking equipment that we also have to lug, which makes that train journey, in my mind, that would be my struggle. So I'm with you in terms of sharing that. I would say that not impossible is where I would put ideas like this, but anything that seems simple for you and your family when we scale it up to 15,000 becomes a logistical question in my mind. But again, that kind of comes back to that builder question. I'm not saying no.
And of course, the great thing with Greenbelt is you have a small army of volunteers.
An army of amazing volunteers, yeah.
How many volunteers do you have at the festival?
1,300 this year. Yeah, big up to them, massively. Yeah.
And on, I guess, a similar theme is just the idea of food and cost of that. And the reality is it's very expensive to buy food over the weekend at the festival. If there were, you know, what would it take to be able to have, you know, some sort of big, cheap food kitchen option on site? Whether it's really dirt cheap catering done in a big way or something else that would make meal planning a bit more accessible and family friendly for people that didn't have to bring all the gubbins. I mean, is that something that has been explored in other ways, or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, access to the festival is something that we talk about as a staff team regularly. From a cost point of view, we realise that it's a real privilege to be at Greenbelt and expensive for a lot of people. So we do have things like the 24-hour cafe, the URC cafe, that attempts to make catering in an affordable way. But I would argue, even if you are a family of five, still that's pretty expensive and maybe not something that you can do all week. And that's not because the guys are trying to make loads of money. It's more just because, like, again, you times that by five, it's already kind of a costly thing. In terms of mass communal kind of catering, it might be something that would take the prices down. It's not something that Greenbelt has done before, so it's not necessarily, I wouldn't be able to start plucking numbers out of the air. But it, again, not out of the realm of possibility. So on my estimates, although we've not got final numbers, I reckon about there's about 1,200 to 1,300 greener belter travellers this year. And thank you if you're one of them. But, you know, maybe for those kind of numbers, not out of the realms of possibility to feed. So, but for maybe 12,000, 15, you know, then we're talking about a bigger thing.
Okay, great. Thank you. We've got a couple of minutes. We've got one hand up. So why not? Let's take a question. And then, yeah, as long as it's quick. Yeah, okay. We'll say something. As you know.
Okay, so I was really honoured actually sort of to be with you guys chatting in our group, because you really honoured us sort of like with how you were chatting. But basically, we've only briefly mentioned and talked about electric vehicles just once. I did a bit of a survey on Friday in part of the car park. I counted 400 cars. There were 32 pure electric cars. That's 8%. Of electric cars, which is 2.3 times as much as the national average. Greenbelters are electric vehicle pioneers. If we were, and this is really exciting, like us two, we were sitting next to each other, how many people drive a bike electric vehicle here? Because this question is not being asked at all, okay? And like, we're still only entitled to red straps, even though we may have burnt zero carbon on the way here. But what I was going to say was this: if we converted 10% of Greenbelt to traveling by alternative modes of transport, rail, bus, or cycling, which is wonderful. I love cycling. It is great. I came to the cycling talk. Dave Walker is awesome. I have as many cartoons from him. I follow him on Twitter. He is great. Okay. We would save 38 tons. If we converted 10% of Greenbelt, okay, that's just the next 10%, okay, to electric vehicles in the year, okay, we would save 900 tons of CO2, because the rest of the year they would also be driving their electric vehicles instead of just coming here. 38 tons versus 900 tons. That's what we could achieve next year if we had a heart for actually doing electric vehicles. That's one of the choices that we could make.
Thank you for your time. No, I like your enthusiasm. Not sure about your maths, but that's fine. As in, I think if you were cycling to site, you might also cycle the rest of the year. But this chap doesn't like electric vehicles, so this is good stuff. So I'm sorry that we have to wrap up right now. But thank you so much for your time. Really, really mean it. Really appreciate all the discussions that's come in. And you know, turning up in the first place to have this discussion. And please.
I just want to say as well, with some of this, we won't fix the world. And I'm not going to be sat here next year saying we've fixed this travel issue. I started by saying this is industry-wide. And we can partner together to do our best. And I would say that Greenbelt is in a space where we are constantly, I would argue, in our staff office, we're doing our best, but we are not perfect. And we're not going to suddenly fix the issues with the rivers. We're not going to suddenly fix the national issue of the fact that the trains are massively expensive, but we are going to do our best. And so I just want to, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for your passion of being at a festival and talking about travel and engaging me in this. And thank you for doing your best. Because whether you've driven, whether you've walked, whether you've cycled all the way from flipping Sheffield, wow, you are doing your best. You're sat here doing your best. And thank you. Thank you. Really.
Before we finish, we've got Bob from Green Ferries. Do you still want to say your 30 seconds? Can you use the microphone or no one will hear you?
If anybody's got any good any other ideas, we'll just be standing out the back like we have been after these sessions. So if people like one-to-ones, come and talk to us. We'll be there with our flip charts.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. And so I want to say a big thank you to Wes, big thank you to Jess, and a big thank you to all of you for all that you've put into our session this morning. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.